It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear here on Declare Your Independence with Mayor Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. I have law enforcement against prohibition on Terry Nelson. Terry Nelson, he's got a career here. He's got some street cred. Let me go ahead and give you a little bit. Law enforcement career spanning 3 decades. It includes service in the U.S. Border Patrol, the U.S. Customs Service, and the Department of Homeland Security, taking him beyond the U.S. borders into Mexico, Central America, South America. He's been involved in the drug war. The boy's got something to say. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Ernest, thank you for having me. It's a real pleasure.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get you down here a little bit. And, you know, I wanted to make sure that you had an opportunity to promote LEAP first. Let's go ahead and talk about your participation with LEAP and what kind of platform that gives you to share with us all. Tell us about LEAP.
Well, thank you for that opportunity. LEAP is a group of law enforcement officers that think the war on drugs is a total public policy failure. We are all of our speakers are volunteers. We have a small staff that's paid, but the rest of us are all volunteers. We're made up of judges, lawyers, prosecutors, DEA, FBI, police, prison wardens, etc., that think the war on drugs just should not go on any longer. It's been too big a waste of money, and more importantly, it's been too big a waste of human lives. So we think a policy change is needed, because for 40 years we've been fighting the war the same way, and we haven't made any progress. So, and common sense would say it's time to change your strategy. We recommend a strategy of legalized regulation and control of all drugs, because to regulate and control anything, first it has to be legal. We must take it out of the hands of the criminal drug gangs and the cartels, and we're never gonna make any progress with this. We believe that your drug problem should be handled as a medical one instead of a criminal one.
All right,
that's kind of it in a nutshell.
All right, well, let's go ahead and crack the nut here. Now I want to get to I know where this is going. We'll get to the end. We'll just skip right to the end. Legalization, regulation, all this. You're taking it from one criminal enterprise and giving it to another. So I'm wondering the philosophical understanding of why LEAP would go from, it's really in the hands of criminals right now because it's being illegal, and then you legalize it as part of being under the total control of one of the very entities that take advantage of it being illegal now. So what's going to happen? It's going to be directed to pharma. They're going to be the ones that's going to be cultivating the drugs. They're going to be the ones that get the government's permission slip. They're going to be and then still going to be illegal for the individual, and you're not going to be able to make your own blah, 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 blah. What's your response to those kind of concerns?
Well, my response is you may be absolutely right, but we won't know until we try it, because all we do know is the model we have is not working. Now, I'm willing to sit at the table, and anyone in my organization is willing to sit at the table with anybody that wants to come up with a solution other than the one we've been doing for 40 years. Now, we believe that if it's regulated by the states like alcohol and tobacco is, with 50 state models out there working on it, one of them is going to get it right, and the rest of them can copy it.
Yeah, that one that says we're not involved, that one. I want that one. Okay, now let's go ahead and talk about tactics. You know, we've had law enforcement on that's been part of your organization that then are not part of your organization. And the reason would be is that as line officers, as in many of the several positions that you've held, they've gone, you know, I'm just not playing. I'm not going to participate. I'm not going to prosecute. I'm not going to, conduct a you know, be part of this machine. And LEAP has been, you know, look, hey, you know, we're still upholding the law as it is. We advocate changing the law. I'm wondering now, what will that always be the policy of LEAP? Is there a time when, you know, it'll be like the soldiers just stop fighting the war? It's the only way to stop it. You know, I'm not suggesting you go into fragging officers so you don't have to go into the bush like in Vietnam kind of thing. But, I mean, there's going to be some type of a resistance from people on the line, I would think, might be necessary. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that may be true, but I don't want to advocate any kind of a violence or armed insurrection against my government. That would be a violation of the law, and we certainly don't want to violate the law.
Well, what about just sitting down? You know, sometimes to stand up for something, you just got to sit down, and you got...
Ernest, many officers out there right today are not making arrests for small amounts of marijuana. They're giving a guy a good butt chewing, and they're letting him go. There are many officers like that out there. And there are just as many officers out there that want to make that over 3 hours overtime the next day, so they're going to bust him for a gram or 2 grams and treat him like a criminal, throw him on the ground, cuff him, and take him down and book him, and therefore ruin his life because you'll never be able to get a decent job after that. But there are many officers out there that are good, solid officers. They understand this is a failed policy. 57% of the police chiefs in the United States know the war on drugs is a failure, and 74% of the public knows it's a failure. We have a lot of good police officers out there. Unfortunately, we have some rogue officers out there, too, that take a little bit too much liberty with their gun and their badge.
We had I just had someone visiting from out of state was telling me this story. And I'll give this to you, and it just reinforces what you were saying. She said there was a sheriff's deputy that was serving a warrant on someone in her home that was the previous occupant, didn't live there. Now, looking through the screen, they live out in a farm area. I mean, they're rural. They're not bothering nobody out in the middle of nothing. And they could see in the darkness, looking into the lighted room through the screen, that when the door was knocked on, they took some marijuana they had in a container on the coffee table and put it under a blanket on the couch and just kind of covered it before they answered the door. The law enforcement comes in and so-and-so, no, they don't live here anymore, not here, don't know what you're talking about, have a nice day. Oh, no, you got to let me, I got a warrant here, I can come in. And he goes, oh, yeah, you better let me in, because we saw you put, you know, your substance that we can smell underneath the blanket on the couch. Okay, so she lets him in, really, seriously, I mean, we're out here, two women, not bothering anybody, you know, we're mature, you know, what? He finally goes, yeah, you should stop that nasty habit, and he left. Now, I'm wondering, I'm going, you know, this, I would think that would instill a great deal more of the idea that they're peace officers, not this law enforcement thing. You know, and you're right. He probably would have got some overtime. He probably would have, I don't know, they got some more money for their department from federal blah, blah, blah. And a lot of times for someone to do exactly what you said, that they just look, man, this is just not, I'm not going to destroy somebody's life because of this. How common is that? What is the mentality? Because we've seen it over the past decade and a half or more that there has been a recruitment and encouragement of somebody to look for an opportunity to screw with people. And I'm wondering what the motivation is. Is it a personality thing, or is there a financial incentive for them to do it?
I think a lot of it is a personality thing. And here, the big difference is a lot of people want to be police officers, and a lot of them want to be peace officers. They serve the public is their boss. Many police officers look at it that way. But then you've got the gung-ho, you know, Rambo types that I'm going to, and a lot of us when we were young officers came in thinking that we could change the world. But, you know, after a few years, about 5 years on the street, you know, you get some maturity, you go, wait a minute, this is not what I'm supposed to be doing. What I'm supposed to be doing is keeping the peace, you know, and just keep people. And I grew up in a small town, so it was not a problem. The sheriff, he'd just separate people fighting and send them home and make them come down to the coffee shop next day and talk about it. But that's a small town. You can't do that in a big city.
Why not?
But, well, I don't know. I've just never seen it happen in a big city. I believe in the sanctity of law enforcement. I believe we have some really terrific officers out there, and I believe given the right opportunity, they do the right thing.
Let's go ahead and talk about it. You're going to push the button on us. You know, we're on the phone with Terry Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And, you know, he's looking for, you know, making sense out of this whole thing. He's going to share it with us. And he has a unique perspective of being on the line. We'll talk more with Terry when we come back here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Chain, chain, chain. 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 Chain of fools.
Yeah, there's a chain of fools. Chain of fools out there just keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over. And is it getting the result that they promised us? Of course not, but you think that was the goal. Let's go ahead and ask Terry that. I mean, that's a really good thing to ask. You know, Terry, what is the real goal? You know, this drug war, let's go from your perspective. When you started, what year did you go into law enforcement?
1974.
Okay, in 74, that's right after the declaration of the war on drugs. Nixon administration going, we're going to have a war on drugs. Now, here we go. We got in the middle of it, and what was the promise that was made? What was the goal?
Well, we would have a drug-free world, and that we would reduce crime and violence, and it would reduce drug use domestically and internationally.
And what happened?
We've met none of those goals. And a matter of fact, all prohibition of drugs has managed to do is increase the use of drugs, just as the prohibition of alcohol increased the use of alcohol. Women didn't drink at all before the prohibition of alcohol, and afterwards women were drinking on a level with men. So prohibition doesn't work, never has worked in history, and it's not going to start working now.
Okay, so that's one thing I want to talk about from your you got some experience. I mean, going from back then to now, and being in the various levels of law enforcement right in the middle of this thing, you got to have a perspective of the corrosive effect it has on not just society, but individuals. Give me some anecdotes, man. Give me a little bit of experience of how the money affects individual officers.
Well, the money part is the greed part, of course, but it affects so many, many different things. I mean, let's just take one thing we'll start with. We talk about how drugs breaks up families. Well, yes, you know, alcohol is the worst drug in the world for family violence. Cannabis, I don't think anyone's going to beat their family. But if you arrest, of the 1.2 million arrests made, 2.2 million arrests made last year in America, 1.8 million of them were for nonviolent drug offenses, of which 800 and some odd thousand were cannabis possession alone. Now, so the result of all of those arrests and putting people in prison is 1.9 million kids go to bed every night with one of their parents in prison. 46% of the people that go to prison have a family member there before them, and 25% of the people that go to prison come out of foster homes or institutions. So if you can't see the correlation of the war on drugs and the destruction of the American family, I don't know what is. And even if you don't have children, you go to jail, you get a felony record, you come back out, you can't get bonded in some states, you can't get licensed in some states, you can't vote in some states, so you're disenfranchised the remainder of your life, and you're not going to become the productive citizen you could become and pay taxes instead of being a drain on society. So I'm for changing the idiocy and you know, getting something that works.
Okay, now the reason that it doesn't change, the reason policy continues down this road is what?
I believe the policy is continuing down this road because Big Pharma does not want it to change. They, you know, Lunesta and what's the one with the butterfly? Ambien CR, they don't want to compete with cannabis when it comes time to go to bed at night. You know, the alcohol companies don't want to compete with cannabis for Joe Sixpack when he gets off work in the afternoon. The pharmaceutical companies were not allowed to advertise about 30 years ago. Sometime in the 80s, I think they started letting them advertise for drugs. And ever since then, you know, people are told what drug they want for this pain in their knee or whatever, and they go to the doctor and say, this is what I want. So what resulted of that? Big Pharma made billions of dollars, and the political parties, both Democrat and Republicans, are equally at the hog trough on this one, receive millions and millions of dollars in contributions from Big Pharma to keep it going that way. The drug testing industry in America alone is a $5 billion a year industry, you know, for people to go down to Walmart and buy drug test kits so they can go home and say, all right, Joe, I want you to urinate in this bottle. I'm going to see if you're using drugs. Now, that, my friend, is the way to establish trust with your kids.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, which drug? I mean, it's like, heck, it's in your food. You know, it's just this cornucopia crap. So I'm really interested in your perspective on how law enforcement should approach this issue, law enforcement against prohibition. So are you advocating that there be some type of action taken by people, by law, by line officers, people out there? Should they make their views known? People that have, man, they've gotten in trouble. Or should they join you after?
That's true. Brian Gonzalez was a Border Patrol agent down in Las Cruces, New Mexico, and he made the comment one day to a friend of his he was working with that he thought that if you would legalize drugs, the violence, crime and violence would go down greatly, and they wouldn't have as many shootings along the border. Well, the guy he said it to, not in confidence, but just in conversation, sitting in two cars talking to each other, reported him, and he was fired from his job for being disloyal or something. I forget the exact charge. Now, I believe he will get his job back because the ACLU from New Mexico is taking his case and filing for him. So that kind of treatment shuts the officers up. So they're afraid to say anything because of retribution from their commanders and stuff. And their commanders are afraid to say anything because, well, I'll give you a quick example. I was at a USIC meeting one time. Now, I retired as the GS-14 Air Marine.
What meeting?
United States Interdiction Committee meeting. It's chaired by Washington, D.C., and they come down and they talk to field commanders about the strategy for the coming year and how we're going to do it. I made the comment in the meeting about, am I the only SOB here that thinks we're doing this wrong, or should we change our strategy here? Well, when one guy sticks his head up out of the hole and says something, about 75% of people clap their hands and said, yeah, whatever. This guy called me up in front of all these other people, probably 50 people in the audience, stuck his finger in my chest and said, Agent Nelson, you don't make policy. You carry it out. So basically he told me I'm not supposed to have an opinion. So I thought, well, you arrogant SOB, just because you have a double PhD and you come down here from Washington, D.C., you won't listen to your field commanders. So what's the point? I mean, what's your goal? I didn't ask him that, but I was thinking that. So, the people, they beat you down if you go to say something. People have a job because they need it. It's not probably a luxury. So, I had two kids in school. I don't want to lose my job. I shut my mouth.
Wow. And how long do you think this can continue before, what's going to happen? I mean, think about it. From the layman's perspective, I've been talking to people from LEAP for, years. And it's been, I remember when Howard Wooldridge did his horse ride across the country. I mean, we've been doing this for a long time. And I'm telling you, the people understand. I think people in law enforcement understand. There's somebody that I'm sure they understand, but they don't want it to change. And you mentioned pharma. Who else?
Well, let's take the defense industry for one. The people that sell helicopters to Mexico and Colombia, they sell the helicopter, which really isn't worth that much money. Let's say $20 million, which is not a lot of money when you're dealing with billions. But the money is made by the maintenance contract that the military contractors make with the government. And that is a money train there. That's a $1 billion money train. And that's what it's all about. If you've never read the book called The Flat Earth Society, you might want to read it sometime. So it talks about how we go into these countries and we do these things and we give it to them on the cheap. We hook them and then we sell them a maintenance contract for 50 years. It costs them hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars and sometimes billions.
It's follow the money.
It's all about the money.
Follow the money. We'll be right back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and our new friend, Terry Nelson from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Ernest Hancock and my very special guest from LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Prohibition of, I vote anything, the second you have a prohibition, all of a sudden whatever it was you're trying to prohibit becomes more valuable to the black market. Well, the free market, as always, that's just called the market as far as I'm concerned. Terry Nelson. Now, Terry Nelson, he's been expanding a decades-long career since 74, the guy's been in the U.S. Border Patrol, U.S. Customs Service, the Department of Homeland Security, and, and not just in this country, Mexico, Central America, South America. I mean, this is, when did you finally evolve past being supportive of what you were doing? I mean, were you ever comfortable with going after people for plants? I mean, at what point did you go, nah, this is just not working?
Well, my primary arrest authority came from Title 19 United States Code, which was a customs law. And because the Border Patrol did not have a drug authority back in the 1974s, that was only the DEA that had Title 21 arrests. So if we made arrests in the Border Patrol for narcotics, it was usually a huge amount, and then you had to call the DEA to come. But under Title 19, my job was to stop smuggling into the country and to make sure that the duties were paid and the products were entered into the country in a fair and legal manner. So I had no problem with protecting the revenue of the United States of America and saying, if you want to bring something in, you've got to pay your duties on it. You've got to enter it legally. You can't sneak it across the border. So there was no conflict there. As far as my belief about the wrong strategy being used was, of course, I developed that when I started working down in Central and South America, and I saw that there was no way. And for example, and we spent $5.2 billion on Plan Colombia, spraying the coca plants and stuff in Colombia. At the end of that time, coca production was up 27% to about 2.2 million pounds of blow a year. Now, in fairness to the ONDCP, which put out yesterday, that coca production in Colombia was down almost in half, which is a true statement. But what they didn't mention, that it's up in Peru and Bolivia. So they're still making 1.8 million pounds of blow a year in the Andean Ridge nations. So, you know, they like to report incremental successes, but they like to hide the fact that the balloon theory kicked in and it started up someplace else. And this is after spending millions and millions. And let's quickly jump to Mexico. We started Plan Merida 5 years ago, and we spent billions of dollars on that. And all we've resulted is 40,000 Mexicans losing their lives, you know, fighting our dirty war for us because of our supply necessity, so to speak. And it's true all over the world. Even if you go into Afghanistan, we've occupied Afghanistan for almost 10 years. The Taliban are stockpiling opium to keep it off the market to drive the price up because it's so cheap, because the country is producing twice the amount required for world supply. So, and then we go out and send our troops out to destroy the fields and shoot the farmers, et cetera, and destroy the factories. And all that does is drive the price up, which helps the Taliban to use the money to kill us.
Now, let's think about this for a second. Is that intentional? I mean, is there some government agency or some drug dealer that's got their hand on the machine of and go eliminate my competition, go eliminate the supply over here, go so I can get more profit and here's your cut? I mean, talk about that. What is the role of the law enforcement from the United States in controlling drug trafficking and how they might benefit?
Well, I don't know. If I knew that answer, I'd probably be, I would be a heck of a lot smarter than I am. But there's got to be something going on here that I can't see. I just can't see it. And I've looked at it from as many angles as I can. I just don't want to believe, although, now, I was in Vietnam in 70 and 71. So I know about Laos and Cambodia, and I know that we shipped heroin home. The CIA did to support the dirty war in Cambodia and Laos. And I know that in out of Nicaragua, we ship cocaine up to help our friends fight the Sandinista, Nicaragua. I mean, I know all these things because now that they've come out. So, but I really don't want to think that my government is keeping this war going to keep black people or Hispanics from being able to vote or to keep their buddies in the military industrial complex fat, dumb, and happy. I don't want to think that of my country, and I'm not going to think it until all other options are gone.
Oh, I think it. I mean, you know, it's and you're right. It doesn't. Should it really play into the decision to decriminalize this? But I tell you, it should play into the decision for legalization, because if the bad guys, the very people that are responsible for this failed policy to continue for their own benefit, I'm sure. Do we want to turn it over to them? Do we want them to have the power, the strings to control and regulate on something that you know where the profits are going to go? Like you say, pharma does not want to compete. So guess who's going to take it over? Pharma.
Well, you know, they've already bought tens of millions of acres of land in South America, and they have also already applied for patents on cannabis. I don't know how you can patent a plant, but and actually the Department of Agriculture also has applied for a patent on cannabis. Why they would need it, I don't really know either. But that's why I mentioned earlier, I don't think it's an item for the federal government to do. I think it's a state's right, Article 10 type situation, a state's right, article to work, a right to work. One of the states is going to get it right. And then the rest of them can follow it. I certainly don't want people inside the Beltline making decisions for me out here, because I haven't seen them. They don't have a very good track record. Let's put it that way.
Well, let's think about this, Terry. We have states that have gone down this road. You know, here in Arizona, California, the federal government comes in, shuts them down. No, you can't. Fear, intimidation, arrest, whatever. And I think it's more than they think it's bad or anything. They just want to maintain their ultimate jurisdiction, that it's going to, whatever you're going to have is not, repeat, not going to be a state initiative. It's going to be at the federal level. It's going to be, you have to send your lobbyists, and the gazillions of dollars going to be made in this are going to be lobbyists going to Washington, D.C., and not to the state houses. It's going to go to us up here in the Beltway, because we want the money and the special interest and our cut of whatever industry that's going to be created from this. I guarantee it. I mean, do you see that trend?
Well, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't have a crystal ball. I wish I did, but I don't. So I only have to guess, like everyone else has to guess what would happen. But when people ask me my opinion, I give it. I say what I think is the best way to do it. But irrespective of my beliefs, if we will sit down at a table and talk about it, we can come up with the right solution. Now, what we can't continue to do is, last week, as you're probably aware, the Global Commission on Drugs put out their statement, and they said, end it. It's over. You got to stop this. And the drug czar's office said these people were misguided. I point out, those people that were misguided is George Shultz, Paulson, former
Treasury Secretary.
You know, the current guy, Prime Minister of Greece, the president of former president of Brazil, Colombia, Mexico. These people are not stupid people. And to write them off and say they're misguided, that's an arrogance coming out of Washington, D.C. that we should not accept.
Without even looking at their report, I can guarantee they were wanting to have it regulated for pharma in some way.
We walked over day before yesterday. I was in Washington, D.C. We had a press conference at the press club, and afterwards we walked over to the ONDCP office. Now, we told them we were coming. We were going to present them our report on ending the drug war, A Dream Deferred is what it's called, and it's on our website if you want to get a copy of it. We walked over to the Gil Kuriosky's office. He knew he was coming. We were with Norm Stamper, a former chief of police up in Seattle, who he knows personally. Of course, he replaced him. We walked into their office, and he sent an administrative assistant down to take the report from us. I was insulted. You know, as many years as I've served my government, 32 years on the border, and I just came from 2.5 years in Iraq, and I was insulted that he would not send at least his assistant police officer down to receive the report, and not an administrative assistant.
The country is turning. It's all changing. It's all coming around to what Leap's been saying. Is it because of what Leap's been saying? Well, they're definitely, you know, at the front of this, and we need to listen to what they have to say, because they represent so many people on the front lines. We're going to talk about that more when we come back. Who are the people that are in Leap?
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, how about some factual information? It's more than a feeling. We know what's up, and we have Terry Nelson from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition here to tell us from personal experience over decades the effect of the drug war. Now, we're talking about, you know, going down to the state for solutions. And, you know, 9th and 10th Amendment, they're up there. Hey, man, if it doesn't say so in the Constitution, it's left to us or the people, and you don't get to have it, no. And they're going, we got canon, man. We can do what we want. Well, my question is, and it's certainly my observation has always been that, you know, this whole thing is just one cut of 1,000 cuts of the death of this central planning thing from Washington, D.C. The drug war is just one of many, many, many failed policies from the concept of we rule you. Not only do we rule you in what you produce, we get to tax it, but what you actually consume into your body. Because the concept, if it's not your body, then whose is it? Oh, they say it's theirs. Oh, I wonder how long that's going to hold up. Well, the people have always demonstrated their preference, but, you know, who's on the other side? Well, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition has a great spokesperson in Terry Nelson. He's saying, you know what? I think we should leave it down to the states. I'm like down to the individual. I don't even want the government involved at all. Well, is it a philosophy thing? Is it a social thing? Is it a cultural thing? Now, Terry, you've been around long enough to see the shift in the culture. When has it really started to amp up? Was there always this opposition, or has it been more recently that people are just going on every aspect of the drug war in at every level? Now, off air, we were talking about some, you know, people that are, you know, inside are starting to come out. And I know this from personal experience and from other people I've talked to, that even prosecutors, judges, they're going, oh, heck no. Give us some examples.
Well, you know, it's hard to off the top of my head give you a name, but I will give you, I've worked these National State Legislators Conference for in Nashville and in New Orleans and in Boston. And so where you have the state senators and congressmen coming there to have their conference, well, LEAP has a booth there. And we set up and we talk to people as they come by. And we always keep a running tab of how many people agree with us, how many don't, and how many tell us we're friggin' crazy and we ought to be shot. That goes in the far right-hand side of the page, by the way. But historically across the board, in the three that I've been at and the five that I've, since I've been in LEAP, all the numbers are about the same. 82% of the representatives and senators that come by our table agree with us. They agree with us. They say it is not working, that something needs to be done. They just can't find the courage to stand up. It's starting to change. Now they're starting to have that courage to stand up because prohibition is a luxury we can no longer afford. It's just costing us too much money. You know, $79 billion a year down the rat hole since it started in 72, about $1.3 trillion, you know, give or take a zero, depending on who's doing the numbers. $1.3 trillion down the hole, nothing tangible to show for it, zero. We just can't waste money like that. We don't have that much money laying around anymore.
Well, I know you probably didn't mean it the way you said it when you say a luxury we can't afford. I'm sure it is a luxury for somebody. For who?
Well, I don't think our government can afford it any longer. We just can't afford it. Look what's happening.
Somebody's making money off of it, and I know who it is. Yeah. It's the drug dealers. You know, the drug dealers and law enforcement.
Well, that's true. I mean, the drug dealers, I mean, Charlie Guzman the year before last, was on the Forbes most one of the wealthiest men in the world. And you know who he is, the Sinaloa cartel. So, they're rich. But according to Benjamin Arellano Felix from the Felix organization out in Southern and Baja California, he said from a Mexico jail cell, the best thing you guys can do is legalize this, and we'll just take our money and put it and continue to put it in shopping malls and go into legitimate business. But, of course, that's not going to happen because if we do legalize it and all this stuff changed, people that committed murder, they're not going to let them go. They're going to keep after them the rest of their lives. It's not going to you're going to wipe the slate clean. But that's a pipe dream on his part. But he does say the best thing to do is legalize it. Because, you know, I'm willing to bet that the cartel leaders, they've made billions. You know, they've got, you know, untold amounts of money. But they have to be a little bit tired of hiding, you know, and not being able to go anywhere without 40 or 50 armed men around them and not knowing if someone's going to cut their throat that night and cut their head off and lay it on the center stripe of a highway.
They just as soon go legit. I'm hip. But the thing is that you're looking at a Republican presidential debate. You have Dr. Ron Paul up there going, hey, man, I don't need the government to tell me whether I should or shouldn't use heroin or not. Now, of course, in South Carolina, the audience is like, yay, you know, out on the internet, yay, everybody's yay, except the machine. They were like, crazy, man, crazy. Is he, you know.
What's he on, yeah.
My thing is of course he's has the popular support, I think. I mean, it's really starting to turn, but it's amazing how the machine would go after even this discussion to the point that they didn't want Gary Johnson involved in this last debate because that was one of his mainstays. Eliminate the war on drugs. They are so afraid of this. Who are they? Why would the media, the talking heads, why are they just representative of the government institution? Who are they?
Well, I'm not usually adept at throwing stones at people, but I'll throw this stone. Fox News is not a news channel. Their entire goal is to get a Republican elected to office no matter what. They're going to do that. But if you will remember the debate, they just wanted to ignore Gary Johnson until he said, hey, what's going on? What am I, a potted plant? And then they started asking some questions. And he wasn't even invited to the CNN one. But Michelle Bachmann was, and she's not even, wasn't even an announced candidate at the time. So, I think the big shot businessmen in the world are sitting back, smoking their cigars, are still around, and a lot of decisions are made in the smoky back rooms.
And a lot of it has to do with the drug. They're holding this off for as long as they possibly can until they can't. And I know they're going to do one thing. What they're not going to give up the revenue stream. It is going to go, and they're going to pay off law enforcement. They're going to get a cut of it. There's going to be, to aid in the enforcement of blah, 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 they'll get a cut of the revenue de la whatever that's coming through the pharmaceutical industry that's doing whatever. And these guys, whatever, 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 and freedom is so not in the discussion. So I got to ask you, Terry, philosophically, aside from all of the damage that the prohibition does, do you come at it at all from it's my body and I can snort Clorox if I want to? I mean, at what point do you just go, it's a philosophical thing down to the individual?
Well, you have to bear, well, you don't have to, but I'd like for you to bear in mind that LEAP is a law enforcement organization made up, and we're not advocating drug use at all. And therefore, we don't, our purpose is not to have everybody out there using drugs. Our purpose is to protect lives and decrease violence. But we do believe that it's a person's choice whether or not he wants to drink scotch, smoke cannabis, or shoot up. I highly recommend against a couple of those. I drink scotch, so that's my drug of choice. I don't smoke cigarettes, but I do drink scotch. So if it were legal, I don't know, would I be like Elliot Ness when he said, what are you going to do now that alcohol is legal? I said, I'm going to go have a drink. I don't really think so, but I'm not going to say that. I might. Hell, I don't know. I might be at a party somewhere and someone might hand me a joint and say, here, take a toke. And I might do it. I'm not going to say I wouldn't, but I don't think that I would. I know dang good well I wouldn't do coke or heroin or meth. I mean, I know I wouldn't do that because I've seen what it does.
Well, I understand your answer. I just want to get more specific on this, and you kind of answered it, but my question is this. Freedom always works better. and certainly the concept that I own my own life and my body. And I'm wondering, if LEAP will ever make that kind of a policy statement. I mean, you almost did. I mean, it's better to let people just, do it as long as they're not violating another's rights and all that kind of stuff. But I'm just, a lot of times when I talk to LEAP representatives, they're always focused on the practical application of prohibition or anti-prohibition, as opposed to that just being a side effect of violating the proper role of government, which is defense of the individual to do what they want.
Okay. I'll make one statement, and it's going to cost me. What would America look like if the Puritans had landed at Plymouth Rock and had gone to South Africa instead?
I don't know.
Well, a lot of this stuff that's happening today is all the right-wing wing nuts, and there are only about 40-some-odd%, but the Republican Party, and I'm a 46-year registered Republican, the Republican Party is catering to the religious right. And these people are not forgiving. They're not the church that I grew up in where, you forgive your neighbor, et cetera, et cetera. So this is an unforgiving bunch nowadays.
I think, Terry, they're going to push the button on us, but I understand your point. I think that they're taking advantage of these people to use as justification for the whole concept of we rule you and everything you make and do and everything because it serves their purpose. Well, hello. This is Ernest Hancock, host of Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, weekdays here on LRN.FM radio. We'll be broadcasting the show live from Porcupine Festival 2011, Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern. We're looking forward to featuring the best and the brightest minds of the Liberty Movement live from Porkfest 2011. Get a full schedule of presentations and activities at PORC. FEST2011.com. PorkFest2011.com offers a full schedule of activities from Monday, June 20th through Sunday, the 26th. PorkFest 2011 will entertain you and provide you a real-world demonstration of life free of coercion, a life of peace and prosperity. Come share in the Lovolution, PorkFest 2011, an experience to benefit your spirit. Be sure to visit us at the Freedom's Phoenix site in Agoura Valley. We know the truth. Join us at PorkFest 2011, and so will you.